You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 256 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman 80th Anniversary 100 Paid Super Spectacular number 1. Batman Superman 2021 Annual number 1. Green Lantern 2021 Annual number 1. Batman Fear State Alpha number 1. Supergirl Season 6 Episode 9 Dreamweaver. Stargirl Season 2 Episode 4 Summer School Chapter 4. DC Legends Tomorrow Season 6 Episode 14 There Will Be Brood. And Titans, Season 3, Episode 1, Barbara Gordon. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Aquaman 2 first images reveal a very different superhero suit. It looks like Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom will introduce Arthur's stealth suit. The new costume is much sleeker and understated than the sharper scaled original.
It's definitely a cool-looking suit, but I also don't want that to be the main suit. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, it's cool in the way that Batman sometimes has some slick-looking costumes, but that doesn't mean I want that to be the normal costume.
Yeah, and I was wondering that myself, if that was going to be the normal costume or something he uses for a special reason.
That was the feeling I got. You never know. I mean, especially with these, they always want to come up with something new and catch your eye. It looks cool. I have no complaints. I'm just hoping it's not his main costume. But honestly, if it is, it's not going to... If that's the worst thing about the movie, that'll be fine.
Agreed. All right, up next for DC News. DC Comics Injustice movie trailer was released. Injustice is set to release on October 19th. And the feature-length animated film will release digitally and via 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray combo pack. So it's not hitting theaters.
Yeah, I mean, not surprised that that's not coming to theaters, especially given, you know, where we're at currently with box office stuff. I'm very much looking forward to this. I'm very excited. I've mentioned several times, the comic series is pretty good. Surprisingly good. The video game is fun and entertaining. I mean, the story's good enough, first one. But then the comic is, like, surprisingly good. And I think played a huge part in that video game getting a sequel was just how popular and successful the comic was. So, I mean, if the movie's anything like that, I think we're going to be in for a pretty good story.
Yeah, the trailer looked pretty good, so I'm excited about it too. All right, up next for DC News, we got a 30-second trailer for Why the Last Man. And what surprises me is it's supposed to start streaming on September 13th. On FX on Hulu. That's just 2 days from now. I didn't realize this series was coming so soon.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was coming up that quickly either. There wasn't a ton to go off of in the teaser. I mean, enough that you got like a loose grasp of the story, but definitely still a lot left for you to discover, to say the least. So very excited to see what the show's going to be like.
I am too. And I read the whole series, so I'm excited to see how much it stays true to the series and how much it deviates. It's not a big deal to me if it deviates. I think the story will be good either way. So
the Vaughn story, it's not a DC property, but the one I would love to see adaptation of, even though I know they made it almost explicitly so that it couldn't really be adapted, would be Saga. I don't know if you've read any of that, Drew, but that's his best work. I would love to see something with that. I think it's unlikely because I think they've said the story. They've basically just gone, you know, so full bore with it, it would be difficult to adapt accurately, but man, it'd be really cool if they did.
I have read some of Saga. I've wanted to go back and revisit it, but haven't had a chance. But that's a series I want to go back and visit too.
Yeah, I mean, Vaughn has done a lot of good work. Certainly, Why the Last Man is one of the more successful runs that he's had, but Saga just takes the cake for me. It is just so good. But anyway, going back to the Why the Last Man, I'm very excited because I told you I've not read, you know, I know of it. I know how successful of a story it was in comic, but I don't really know it. So I'm very excited for the show.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you think about it. So looking forward to reviewing that one. All right. And last for DC news, DC announces its first webtoon with Batman Wayne Family Adventures. Webtoon is a mobile storytelling app, and it's currently the world's leading digital storytelling platform with over 72 million active users on average. The collaboration with DC Comics comes with the hope that Webtoon will introduce these iconic characters to a new generation of comic readers. Now, I wanted to ask you, Cletus, I've never heard of Webtoon before. Have you?
No, I've not. But I imagine that it appeals heavily to the audience that they're really trying to get, which is younger readers. You know, digital platforms are where they're at. And if they're, you know, like short web comics, or in particular, I would imagine short manga, if they can, I think it's smart. Why not do it, right? I mean, if it's that popular, and I'm sure it is popular with the audience that they particularly want to get, I think it's a great idea.
I was looking the news article. It looks like Bruce is going to be living with multiple Robins or multiple Wards. So it's got an interesting dynamic to it that I'm interested in checking out. So I may end up downloading this app just to check it out.
My guess is, Drew, and this is just pure speculation, I bet that these comics are pretty similar to the old newspaper serials, you know what I mean, where you'd get only like three or four panels, but they'd keep an ongoing story running. I could be wrong. I imagine that's what a lot of these are like, though, and I think that would be a reason to have the different Robins and slash other sidekicks there, because it allows you to branch the story off more.
Oh, that would make a lot of sense. So I'll have to check this out and report back at a later time. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hi, everyone. It's Nathan, host of the 42cast. Our second season is just underway, and it's never been a better time to check in on what we're doing. Whether it's talking about the latest movies from the MCU, watching the Arrowverse shows, talking about classics such as Star Trek and Doctor Who, playing 8-bit video games, or sharing celebrity interviews, the 42cast has something for everyone. So give it a listen and discover why it's the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. The 42cast is a proud member of the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman 80th Anniversary 100 Page Super Spectacular Number 1. All right, Cletus, there was quite a few stories in the Super Spectacular, and I really didn't want to recap all of them. So I think what we should do is pick out our top story and talk about that. So I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you what your top story was out of this.
Actually, it's pretty easy for me. The one that was based on the Bombshells figurine line, the Rhine Maidens, was easily my favorite. So in this story, you get this myth of this harp can control these mermaids, water nymphs, but a man has to essentially feel no love, otherwise he'll get seduced by the nymphs and they'll destroy him. So Aquaman shows up, you know, they attempt to seduce him, it doesn't work, but it's not that he doesn't feel love, it's that he feels love for Mira, and so he doesn't fall for the nymphs, and so then they think he's going to use the harp to control them, but really he destroys the harp so that they can live their own lives free from control. It's really, like, the story itself is really nice. The artwork is phenomenal, I thought, and the way they frame the panels, it's just really good overall. Like, the story was nice. It was a cool, you know, simple Aquaman story, but the artwork really, I thought, pushed it over the top. And they really, I mean, it is so clear that they're based on those Bombshell things because they look exactly like them.
Well, Cletus picked the one I was going to pick, so I really enjoyed that story too. So, and the fact that when they, at the end of the story, when they got the harp and Mira and Arthur broke it together, I thought that was pretty cool. All right, since you picked that one, I'm going to pick another one. I also liked Between Two Shores. A trench has attacked the people of Atlantis, and when Aquaman and Mira investigate, they learn that the trench was raised from a baby by an Atlantean, and he only attacked to protect his father. And we see that Aquaman puts the family under his protection. I really like that story. That would have been my second pick.
That one was pretty good. I think I wish that one had a little bit more to it than what we got. I understand, you know, it really couldn't have been that much longer just because of the nature of the comic, but that was one that I thought could have used a little bit more length just because it was good. It had a lot of good stuff going on. I wanted more than just the, you know, whatever 5 or 6 pages of that story.
I could see that story having more to it, more depth to it.
You know what I mean? Because it ends inconclusive. Like, it ends in a way that makes sense. Like, you can kind of piece together what's going to happen after that. But it is very open-ended in a sense at the end because you don't really know, like, where does the story go from there? Obviously, Aquaman picks a side, and obviously he's going to win, but what does that look like? What's their life look like after that? And so that's just something, again, that's just something that would be interesting to see more of. It's not that the story failed in that regard. It was quite good. It makes me want to see what happens next.
All right. There was another story I was going to ask you about. I'm looking for it real quick. But it was the story where Aquaman goes back in time.
See, I did not like that one. I thought that one left too much out.
The reason I wanted to ask you about it was, do you ever remember Aquaman wearing that costume before?
No, I don't. And I was curious about that too, Drew. I actually wanted to ask you about that because I was like, I don't know, are they hinting at this as a story we're going to see in the future? You know what I mean? And it was a pseudo future state comic. I truly don't remember ever seeing anything. It felt like it was a throwback because so many of these comics were throwbacks to, you know, different eras of Aquaman, as you would want. But man, I don't know, Drew. I did not recognize that at all.
I didn't either, and I thought it was some sort of throwback to a time where he had a costume like that.
But I know for a fact it wasn't the 90s, because the 90s is when they went with the hook and the, like, over-the-top gritty look. And so it's not that.
Yeah.
I don't think it was the 80s, because I'm pretty sure he was rocking the, still doing the gold scales in the 80s, I thought.
So I was unsure about that. The other thing I wanted to say about that story, I think I remember reading about that character he visited at some point. I can't remember what story it was from, if it was modern, older. I just remember that character from ancient Atlantis and having, you know, like one of the kings having magic powers.
John's run on Aquaman during the New 52 definitely dealt with an older king. I can't remember if that's the same one or if they're just, you know, a similar concept. I don't remember enough to say for sure.
Okay. I just wanted to ask you about the costume and stuff because I've never seen that before. So apparently
No,
you
I
haven't
yeah.
either.
I do not recognize it, and I did not like the way it, like, the last few pages just really did not do it for me. I needed more.
Now we had two stories at the end of this issue where they were continued. The first one was Red Sea. It was written by Chuck Brown and illustrated by Valentine D. Landro. Monsters attack Black Manta's home looking for a rock. Black Manta must find out the meaning of this rock, and it's to be continued in Black Manta number one, which I believe comes out, it either comes out next week or the week after. So it's coming out really soon.
It was not my favorite story, obviously. It wasn't the one I picked, but it was good enough that it had me interested to see more from the miniseries that's coming up. So, like I said, it certainly wasn't the best, I didn't think, but it was enough. It definitely caught my interest. It's like, okay, where are we going with this?
Yeah, and I'm sure the miniseries is going to flesh it out a lot more, so. All right, and the last story we had in this issue was called Foreshadow, written by Brandon Thomas and illustrated by Diego Alategre. Aquaman and Jackson come back from training. Jackson watches Andy while Mira and Arthur go off for some time alone. Pirates attack Jackson and Andy looking for some guide stone Andy found on the beach. Jackson holds them off until Mira and Aquaman return. Aquaman decides to give Jackson something that he and Batman were working on that involves apocalypse technology, and it's to be continued in Aquaman the Becoming, which is a miniseries I know that's coming up soon.
You know, honestly, Drew, as a setup story, it really did not make me any more interested. I am interested in that story just because I'm interested in the characters that are going to be featured in that. Obviously, I like Aquaman. You know, this seems like it's about Jackson taking over the mantle, and as well as Andy possibly also growing up. I don't know. We'll see. I'm just basing off of what we saw from Future State. So, like, those things I'm interested in, but this, it wasn't bad, but it didn't really, there wasn't enough there. It was really only the last line. I was like, hey, what about Apocalypse? I was like, okay, well, that's interesting, but everything else was just sort of a story.
Yeah, I agree with you. The apocalypse thing got me intrigued. So, but yeah, I agree with you. It looks like we're gonna be going. Jackson's gonna be taking over the mantle of Aquaman, and I think we hinted that about that in DC News a while back. So.
The only thing I just wanted to add real quick, Drew, that I liked in this one that I don't remember from the Green Arrow one or some of the other anniversaries issues that we read was on the spreads, the full page spread of characters. On the bottom, they had their like the character name and then the first appearance of that character. That was a really cool touch, and I hope we see that more in the future anniversary issues that we see. I don't remember that being in the other ones.
I think they've been listening to our podcast, and the one you did recently where he gave all the what was it for the Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Well, I just think it's cool. I think especially in this era of easy access to a digital archive for both DC and Marvel, it just makes sense to list those things because it's frankly much more realistic that people can go back and read those issues. It's cool, and I think it's just cool because it's something where, like, if you don't care, you just enjoy the nice artwork of the page and you move on. But if you are interested, you're like, oh, that's the first time Mira popped up. I'm interested in reading that. You can go back and look at it. I thought, I just, again, it was a very small touch, but I very much enjoyed that they put that in there.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman Superman 2021 Annual Number 1. The World of the Dark Knight, Arkham Asylum. Warden Lex Luthor has the Lex Luthor from the World of Tomorrow captive. The Warden uses a machine to augment his mind with that of the other Lex Luthor. Alfred the Eagle modifies the bat signal to call for Superman. Commissioner Gordon informs Superman that Lex Luthor has taken over Metropolis and renamed it Lexopolis. The city is being powered by the Omni battery, and Superman's job is to take out that battery. First, Superman gets attacked by a man bat that can turn into mini bats. Next, Superman is attacked by Poison Ivy and her plants. And then finally, Superman confronts Two-Face as a kryptonite-powered cyborg robot. Superman goes for the Omni battery, then realizes it's sentient and controlled by Luthor. The Omni battery punches out Superman. Superman wakes up to find himself in a secret hideout of the Spider Syndicate, a secret resistance against Lexopolis. Its members include Spider Lady, Bibbo, and the wife and son of Rudy Jones, who is currently the Omni battery. Superman returns to Lexopolis with his new allies. Seeing his family, Rudy Jones, the Omni battery, is able to overcome Lex's mind control and take out Two-Face. This allows Superman to take out Warden Luthor. Superman takes Spider-Lady, aka Lois Lane, back to the new headquarters that is in between the world of the night and the world of tomorrow. And it's called the Fortress of the Night. And then Superman and Spider-Lady kiss. And then right at the very end of that story, we have Batman shows Robin a gift from Superman, the statue of his parents. Next, we have the other story from the world of tomorrow at Blackgate Penitentiary. Bruce Wayne, also known as Bizarro Two-Face, breaks his security collar and escapes from prison. 2 days later, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, Police Commissioner James Gordon compare notes over breakfast at the most popular donut shop in town, Bertinelli's. Batman and Robin show up to help. We see that Officer Matches Malone is keeping an eye on Martha Wayne at Arkham Gardens Rehabilitation Center. When Two-Face Bizarro shows up, he kidnaps her. Batman and Robin stake out Crime Alley. Two-Face Bizarro can't decide if he should kill Martha or not. Batman gives him a coin to flip. Martha lives. Robin gets the collar back on Two-Face Bizarro, and the Waynes are taken back to their respective correction facilities. As Batman and Robin are about to leave the world tomorrow, Alfred is not happy that Martha Wayne was not returned to his care. Alfred turns into Doomsday. Batman and Robin lead Alfred Doomsday to the Fortress of the Night, where Batman knows Superman is.
Which then spins back into the middle of the story, in which, as Superman is coming back with the Spider Lady, he realizes Batman's in distress and knocks out the Doomsday, Alfred.
Yeah, with one punch. I don't remember Doomsday being that easy to take out, but good job, Supes.
Maybe because he was half Alfred, half Doomsday.
That could very well be. I really enjoyed this story because when we left off in the regular series, it looked like it was going to tie into a big event. And this just focused on the two worlds. We got to see a story with Superman and a story with Batman and Robin in each other's world. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. One thing I should mention I thought was cool with this, that obviously we read it digitally, so there was really only one way for us to have read this. But physically, you could have read this either way, because they meet in the middle. So you could have started with a Batman story and started the Superman story with seeing him knock out Doomsday and then get into his. So I thought that was cool, the way the two kind of merged together in opposite directions. That was a nice, like, from a comic crafting standpoint, was really cool.
I agree. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Green Lantern 2021 Annual Number 1. Sinestro is informed that 3 yellow rings have been detected, with one currently active, headed straight toward New Corrigor, the Sinestro Corps' homeworld. Sinestro decides he will welcome the Lanterns home personally. Jessica Cruz appears before Sinestro with 3 yellow lanterns in chains, Lo, Ugh Eye, and Lisa Drack. And she says to Sinestro, "Sinestro, I think you misplaced these." I thought that was pretty funny. Jessica Cruz introduces herself to Sinestro as the Green Lantern of Sector 2814. Sinestro states, "Former Green Lantern, you mean." Lisa Drack is able to break out of Jessica Cruz's chains, and she takes the yellow lantern from Jessica and then attacks her with snakes, who take the yellow ring off of Jessica's finger. Jessica wakes up in a room alone. Only her Green Lantern ring is hanging around her necklace. She receives a message from Sinestro that she is not a prisoner and he wishes to speak with her. Jessica tries to return the yellow ring to Sinestro. And Sinestro states he's not a sadist, altruist. All he's ever sought was peace and the power to bring it. Sinestro tells Jessica to keep the ring for now. It's your only transportation home. And when Sinestro assigns a Yellow Lantern to 2814, Jessica can turn the ring over to them. On the way home, Jessica comes across a ship that's in trouble. Jessica relieves the captain of duty because his decision-making is impaired by fear. Jessica puts the first officer in command. Hal Jordan shows up, and he's not pleased that Jessica cruises a Yellow Lantern. The ship is still in trouble, and Hal states he'll take care of it. Jessica realizes the truth and goes to fix the mistake she made, putting the first officer in charge. She was really a space pirate. The first officer had hijacked the ship to smuggle goods to Earth. Jessica Cruz returns to New Corrigor, and she has decided to accept the invitation to be a Yellow Lantern to bring good to the galaxy.
Drew, I really like the potential status quo that's being established in this comic, at least for the time being, with Jessica being a Yellow Lantern. I'm going to be honest, I kind of hope it stays that way. I like her as a Yellow Lantern, and I think it also helps solve their problem of having just an absurd number of human lanterns. It's too many. I think we can agree on that. I like all of them. I don't dislike any of the characters, but there's just too many. And this is how you get around that. This is how you keep a character involved and interesting without, you know, needing to sacrifice a roster spot, so to speak, for one of the other, 8 human lanterns.
I agree with you. I think the status quo change of Jessica becoming a Yellow Lantern is interesting, especially with, we've seen Jessica struggle with fear for quite a while and her, you know, kind of overcome her anxiety and stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see her as a Yellow Lantern because, one, we know Jessica's good-natured. So she's going to be interesting to watch how she interacts with the other Yellow Lanterns, keeping them in check. And she flat out told Sinestro, you know, if you do something evil, I'm going after you. So I think this is going to be a really interesting dynamic. I don't know if we're going to see Jessica Cruz in the Green Lantern titles, if she's going to get her own miniseries, if they're going to do some sort of Yellow miniseries. It'll be interesting to see what they do in the future for her.
Everything you just said, Drew, she's dealt with fear so much as a character, and I think I like it as a character. Like, I like that she didn't start as a Yellow Lantern. It makes sense. First, she learns how to overcome her own fear as a Green Lantern, and now she can control it and use that to help others, you know, as a Yellow Lantern. That is, I think it's cool. I like the character arc that is built in with that. It keeps the Yellow Lanterns around. I'm a huge fan, I've said this many times, of having this world of lanterns rather than just the Green Lanterns on their own. No, I said this when we reviewed the comic, what was it, a year or 2 years ago at this point, when they changed Kyle back to just being a Green Lantern. I was personally bummed by that. Not because I don't like him, but because the same thing with Jessica. There's just so many human Green Lanterns already. I liked that Kyle was something different, and to change him back was a little frustrating to me because I was like, but why? You're making him less relevant by doing that. So I hope this sticks around. I would love to see Kyle go back. I know he won't, but I think this is a smart way to keep these characters around because I don't want any of them to not, you know, be in print at least a little bit, but it's hard to do if they're all competing for the same story.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know how long they're going to drag out the storyline with the Green Lanterns not having their power. Because right now, we only have 3 Green Lanterns. We have Joe, which I think she was, Hal mentioned her in this. We got Joe. We've got Hal, who's basically a power battery himself. And then we've got Teen Lantern, we know that still has access to Green Lantern power. So they're the only 3 right now. So I'm just wondering what they're going to do with them. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week. Batman, Fear State, Alpha Number 1. Arkham Asylum, many months ago, Simon Saint paid Jeremiah Arkham an absurd amount of money to have a private conversation with Jonathan Crane. Saint Simon and Jonathan Crane form a partnership to bring about Fear State to Gotham. Arkham Asylum now. Scarecrow has Batman captured and pumped full of Scarecrow's toxins. We also see that Peacekeeper 1 has been drugged by Scarecrow, and Simon Saint is unable to locate him. Simon decides to shut down all communications in Gotham. No internet, no cable, and no phone. Simon takes over the airways and runs his media package, an infomercial for the Magistrate program. Finally, the Magistrate will move in on Alleytown, making it a win for them. At GCPD headquarters, Commissioner Montoya is not happy with Mayor Nakano for promising full cooperation with the Magistrate. At the clock tower, Barbara feared the Magistrate would go full communication blackout. Barbara decides to plug directly into Gotham's emergency broadcast system and provide the truth. When Barbara goes to send her message, she is completely locked out of the Oracle system. Someone has hijacked it and are sending their own message telling people not to trust the government, the Magistrate, or any of the Bat family. And they tell the people Batman is dead. And the only one you can save is yourself. Only trust yourself and the people you love. Hunker down and get ready for war. Then Oracle gets a private message from the new Oracle telling her she is cut off for good, and then her computer blows up. Eden, deep under Gotham, Harley Quinn convinces a dark poison ivy to let the Insanity Collective stay hidden in her underground sanctuary for now. Ghostmaker suggests that Ivy use her pheromone abilities to calm the war brewing on the surface. Ivy states she is not interfering in the war unless they attack her. Now in Alleytown, Catwoman is with another part of Ivy. Catwoman tells her to stay put. Catwoman returns to her HQ and learns that the Magistrate troops are marching into Alleytown. We see Jace Fox is in his Batcave staring at his phone. Then he looks up at the Batsuit before him. Back at Arkham, Batman breaks out of his restraints and we see him jump out the window. And that's the end of the issue.
Well, obviously, we're getting the beginning of the big Scarecrow story. Tinian has mentioned this in like the interview they've been printing at the back of a lot of these current issues, talking about how we wanted Scarecrow to have a big one, that he'd been kind of treated frequently as kind of a more of a less serious or less serious threat Batman villain, and he wanted him to have a big event comic. So I get why he's doing it. I don't know that I've bought in, if I'm being honest. I think part of it is just event fatigue, and that's not really, I mean, it's a little bit Tinian's fault because he just did the last one too, but I also suspect he probably didn't have a choice. And we've talked a lot about this, Drew. It's short-term results for DC or Marvel, they do it too, that long-term just, I think, sacrifices their reader base. And I kind of wish we could do more low-scale stories instead of it always being Gotham is completely, like, Gotham's gotten taken over completely. And they mention it within the story, like, 3 times in less than a year. It's too much, Drew. I mean, at least with Kings, I know Kings ultimately ended with that, but that was an 80-issue run, Drew, that led up to that.
Yeah, I miss the old days of Batman comics where we'd have these stories in between bigger events, but the big events were spread out a lot farther. Yeah, it just seems like it's one event after another. It's getting tiresome.
I agree. I think I could be more interested in this. It's not that I'm not interested, Drew, in a Scarecrow-centered story. And it's not that I don't think you could do an event thing with him. I just don't want it already. We just got done with the Joker one, and I was not the biggest fan of that, personally. And the last thing I wanted was to just stumble backwards into the next one already. And not to mention, the only real thing in between the two was Future State, which in itself felt basically like an event comic. You know what I mean? So we haven't really gotten a break from just complete highest of high stakes, just back-to-back-to-back stories.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I was very happy we didn't see Punchline in this.
Well, for now. Let's be honest.
Oh, I know she's going to come at some point, but I was happy.
Agree. I agree with you, but yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 6, Episode 9, Dreamweaver. Kelly meets with Joey, a young orphaned alien who's acting out in foster care. Joey fears there is something wrong with his brother Orlando, who is in jail. Dreamer keeps having a reoccurring dream of her mother, but she is unable to get her attention. An imp from the fifth dimension, who is stripped of her powers, is trapped in Nia's dream. Nixie makes a deal with Nia. If Nia can get her out of her dream and back into the real world, Nixie will bring her mom back from the dead for a day. Kara and Kelly make a visit to prison to check up on Joey's brother Orlando, who doesn't seem very happy. Supergirl follows the prison bus to Orlando's job and uses her X-ray vision to find out that they are just walking through the building and then loading up in a van. Kara follows the prisoners to a factory where they are being forced to steal bomb parts that tie into Martian Manhunter's investigation. We see Nixie is trying to convince Nia to let her out of the dream, but an owl is telling Nia the opposite. Nixie tries to convince Nia the owl is evil. William and Kara figure out that Cypress Holdings is a front for Energang, and that is who's behind the bomb parts heist. When Kelly finds out how Joey's foster mom deals with his power outburst, she returns to the home later that night and hacks into the video footage. Kelly downloads the video footage showing the abuse. Supergirl and Martian Manhunter free the aliens from their jailers. Supergirl promises to help the aliens get their voices heard. We see that Joey's foster mom is arrested. Joey's brother is free from jail and is able to pick up Joey. William interviews Supergirl about the corruption in the work release program. Kelly decides that she needs to pick up where James left off. She wants to become the new Guardian. And then at the end of the episode, we see that Nia finally gives in and makes a deal with Nixie.
I mean, Drew, come on. Like, I would be more frustrated that Nia falls for the trick if I cared about the show. But I don't, so it didn't frustrate me that much. But I was still watching, and I was like, come on. I mean, she couldn't be doing more overtly villainous things. Like, it was the most cliched, I'm the bad guy, but I'm trying to convince you I'm the good guy lines.
I know, it was so obvious. And, you know, and Nia was doing the right thing for a while, but she ends up giving in. I'm like, really?
Well, and the thing that made it frustrating, too, it would be better, I think, if they made it less clear that the owl was obviously good. Obviously, obviously trying to help her. I mean, they could not, like, if they had made that a more of a kind of gray area where, like, the owl doesn't explicitly tell her that the imp is bad, I think I could forgive it a little more. But they, like, but, I mean, it's just so clear on both sides. The owl is obviously on her side, and the imp is obviously not on her side, and they're like, yeah, she doesn't pick the owl. Come on.
The other thing I want to point out is they've dealt with Mr. Mixie Piddalick before. I mean, they should have an aversion to imps in the first place.
Well, she does. She does. She's hesitant because she's like, well, I don't, you know, imps aren't really trustworthy. I don't want to do this. And then she comes back. It's like, actually, now that I've thought about it, you are completely trustworthy. I'm fully in.
Yeah.
The other thing that we already talked about this when they released the photos of the new Guardian. But I mean, my same thing stood when James became Guardian, is that neither of the Olsen siblings, I mean, they can put on the costume and sure it's going to make them more protected from damage, but Drew, she's a therapist. She's a social worker. She's doesn't have any hand-to-hand combat experience. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that frustrates me with, and it's not just Supergirl. It's a lot of these CW shows that basically, like, a character gets a costume, and it's almost like The Matrix, where they just download the ability to do all of these hand-to-hand combat techniques.
That's so very true. Alex is supposed to be training her, but we know she's not going to pick up that stuff that fast.
Right, and I believe that Alex could train her over a period of time, but we know that's not what it's going to be, especially because this is the last season. It's going to be instantaneous.
Yeah, she'll be in the costume next episode.
And I'm sure she'll have some struggles and she won't be quite as good as she should be, but she will still be more competent than not, at least not enough to get herself killed, when really, if we're being honest, if you just threw her in that costume right now and put her out on the streets to be a hero, realistically, she would die. And I know that they're not going to do that. I'm not advocating for them to do that, but it's just so frustrating when they just kind of do the absolute fastest speed course possible for these characters to go from nothing to hero.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Stargirl, Season 2, Episode 4, Summer School, Chapter 4. After trying to talk her mom into going on a date with her father, Beth discovers that the JSA file on Eclipso is confidential. Courtney asks Pat about Eclipso, and Pat tells Courtney that Eclipso is the devil in the shadows. Real evil imprisoned inside the Black Diamond. Whoever has the diamond has Eclipso's power. Eclipso can get inside your head, make you see things that aren't there. The diamond can drive people to do bad things to themselves and to others. The longer Eclipso is active, the more powerful he becomes. We see Mike is delivering papers when he comes across the Crocs, who have broken out of prison. Mike leaves a message for Pat to meet him at the pit stop. The Crocs don't want trouble. They just want to watch their daughter try out for football and then sneak back into prison. The Black Diamond is from a place called Diablo Island, or Devil Island. It is no longer on modern maps, and it stopped appearing on maps in 1832. The legend goes that there were two warring tribes living on different sides of the island. One of the tribes summoned an evil entity of vengeance and trapped it in the Black Diamond. An explorer named Bruce Gordon rediscovered the island, but when he got there, everyone on the island had been dead for decades. Bruce Gordon was the only one who ever returned from the island. Courtney goes to a bookstore trying to find books about Bruce Gordon when she runs into the Shade. The Shade tells Courtney that Eclipso killed Dr. Midnighter's daughter. The Shade plans to find the Black Diamond and throw it into the deepest part of the ocean so that it is never found again. At the tryouts, Cindy Berman shows up with the Eclipso Diamond and targets Artemis Croc for her next recruit. Artemis thinks she sees the SWAT team targeting her parents and ends up attacking Courtney. Courtney decides since Pat won't tell her any more about Eclipso, then maybe the Shade will. And then at the end of the episode, Beth is still trying to get Chuck online when another persona comes online. It's the real Charles McNider, and he's stuck in the shadows. I got to tell you, Cletus, that reveal that the real Charles McNider was stuck in the shadows, that I thought that was pretty cool. Because we know Pat thinks he was dead, but him being stuck in the shadows all the time, it's going to be interesting to see him come back.
Well, and now here's my question to you, Drew. Why is he stuck in the shadows? We know something happened with Eclipso that is bad enough that Pat truly thinks it is best if the kids don't know, because it will, in his and his wife's mind, irreparably change them.
Oh,
I think there are two options. For me, the two I think are either Pat got in under the influence of the diamond, and that seems less likely to me, but I think it's possible. Or more likely, I think the big one is that Dr. Midnighter got under the influence of the diamond, and I think potentially he's the one that killed his own daughter.
Oh man, that would be really dark. I have a feeling the second one would be correct theory. I can't see. I mean, it's possible Pat could be under the influence of the diamond, but I don't see that as what has happened. I think you might be correct with your second theory there. That's a really interesting take. That'd be a really interesting twist. They get Charles out of the shadows just to find out he's being controlled by Eclipso. Really interesting. Good theory there, Cletus.
I could be wrong, but I strongly suspect that somebody in the JSA was taken over by the diamond. And realistically, those are the only two options, in my opinion. And I just think it's very likely that it's Dr. Midnighter.
Yeah, I like that theory a lot. Another really great episode of Stargirl. I'm really liking this season a lot.
Yes, I agree. I loved getting Sportsmaster and Cheshire in for an episode. They were just hilarious. They got to kind of stretch their legs a little bit last season in a couple episodes, but obviously they were overshadowed, you know, by the Icicle and the rest of the JSA. And I liked the way they did this, where they basically just popped in for an episode to kind of like chew some scenes and then drift back into the background. That was awesome.
That is awesome. And it kind of opens them up to do it again sometime in the future, which I'm sure is going to happen.
Yes.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. DC Legends Tomorrow, Season 6, Episode 14, There Will Be Brood. John Constantine and Bishop steal the Wave Rider. Bishop offers to help John find the Fountain of Imperium in exchange for his freedom. The rest of the Legends are at John's house, but Astra and Spooner were aboard the Wave Rider when it was stolen. They discover that John and Bishop have taken them to Odessa, Texas in the year 1925. A man has a wounded leg and a woman runs up to help him. Spooner realizes this woman is her mother. John and Bishop find mushrooms instead of the Fountain of Imperium. Bishop explains that Earthlings eventually discover that mushrooms are an ancient alien species. Bishop thinks these mushrooms are connected to the fountain. John Constantine comes across young Spooner gathering mushrooms for her mother because she is a healer. When young Spooner gives John a flower, something strange happens, and John follows young Spooner back to her house and runs into Astra and older Spooner. The Legends decide they need a time ship. They post a picture of Mick with the eggs and tag Kayla on the Intergalactic Facebook. John uses his magic to show Spooner what really happened to her mother. The oil men kill her, and the alien mushroom transports Spooner away to safety. John convinces Spooner to give him her blood so he can obtain magic from the Fountain of Imperium. Kayla shows up at John's house and learns the real eggs are on the Wave Rider. Kayla is going to need the Legends' help to stop Bishop. It's decided that young Spooner needs to lose her mother and go to the alien mushroom, otherwise history will be changed. Astra takes young Spooner, while older Spooner goes with her mother to face the oil men. When the oil men try to kill Spooner's mother, Spooner uses magic on the oil men to have them feel the pain she felt after losing her mother. Then the oil men run away. Young Spooner gets transported by the giant mushroom. The Legends find their ship. Bishop has set up a booby trap for the eggs. Mick gets caught in the explosion. Bishop double-crosses Constantine by putting poison in the potion he needs to trick the giant mushroom. Instead, Bishop destroys the mushroom because its true purpose is to protect Earth from alien attack. When the giant mushroom dies, it affects Spooner also. When John dies, his body is cocooned and then disappears.
Drew, I know it's unlikely, But I couldn't, my mind went to it immediately when John disappears with the mushroom roots. I saw a Swamp Thing. I mean, the two are tied together in the comics so closely anyway. And I know that that's probably not where they're going, but that's immediately what I thought of.
Huh. I didn't even think about that, but that makes a, that would make a ton of sense. I know we saw John got cocooned, and I know he's supposed to be transforming. I'm guessing he's going to break out of this cocoon in the last episode and become whatever he's supposed to be next season.
And part of me makes me wonder if, obviously we're going to get something that's not, quote, John. But I wonder if it really is actually the end of John, or if this is just, you know, in some ways a misdirection. And we will, not immediately, right, but at some point get, like, you know, John Constantine again.
That would be awesome if they did that, but we'll see. I guess we'll see what they do.
Right, obviously it depends. You know, I think we'll have a better idea next episode of what that's going to look like. But I think, I know I was certainly under the impression that Matt Ryan was going to be playing somebody completely different, similar to what they did with Vixen becoming Charlie. And now I'm wondering if that's not really the case. If he is technically playing somebody new, but it's John turned into something new. You know what I mean? Again, this is just speculation, but I'm wondering if maybe that's actually where they're going. He's not actually playing, you know, some totally unrelated, completely different character.
So just to clarify, you think we might be getting John back as a new person, but still have John's personality?
No. I'm wondering if he'll be transformed in some way, Drew, so that he becomes something else, whether that's, again, unlikely, but possibly Swamp Thing or some other thing that is technically John. Right. But it's, he's become something else. He's gotten transformed by this experience. The cocoon turns him into something new. But at some point that is undone. And that would be the true end of his arc, is the, like, restoration of Constantine.
Oh, okay. Now I understand what you're saying. That would be interesting.
It would. I feel like they've kind of, I mean, we've seen something pretty similar to this already this season, where with Sarah is obviously still Sarah Lance, but not completely, right? She's a clone. She's part alien. It wouldn't surprise me if that's building towards a true transformation. And we see that with Constantine. And so then, yes, technically, they've not been lying, and Matt Ryan will be playing something new next year, but not maybe in the way that we thought.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Man, if it was Swamp Thing, that'd be freaking awesome.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm dubious, just, you know, for a number of reasons, the biggest being it's CW, and that would be, I think, hard for them to pull off every episode. But I mean, it's possible, right? Like, I truly don't think you can completely rule that out.
Yeah, you can't. That would be an interesting twist, that's for sure. We've got one more episode of Legend, so it'll be interesting to see what happens and what will Legends look like next season. So I'm sure we'll get a hint of that, just like we did for this season with it being aliens. I'll be curious to see where they go from here. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Titans, Season 3, Episode 1, Barbara Gordon. Jason Todd tracks down Joker to an old amusement park. Bruce Wayne is on a plane back to Gotham. He tells Jason not to go after the Joker alone. Jason doesn't listen and goes after the Joker anyways. We see he takes some sort of green liquid and then suits up. And when Robin arrives at the amusement park, he gets surprised by the Joker and beaten with a crowbar. Dayton Labs, San Francisco. The Titans stop Gizmo from getting the clench. It's a bioengineered strain of Ebola that struck Gotham a few years ago, but it was contained. Gizmo was planning to sell it to the highest bidder. Tim is out delivering food for the Golden Noodle House. He stops at a newspaper stand to check out articles on Batman. Two cops stop Tim and wonder why he's out past curfew. One of the cops notices his bat symbols on the bike and tells him to find a better role model. When Tim gets back to the restaurant, he hears on the news that Robin and a security guard have been killed by the Joker. Dick returns to Wayne Manor. He finds Bruce down in the Batcave, cleaning the blood off Jason's mask. Jason has already been buried in the family plot right next to Alfred. When Dick tries to talk about Jason's death, Bruce immediately starts investigating a new villain in Gotham that has killed 7 victims. Back at the Titans Tower, Starfire informs Connor and Garth that Jason is dead. Starfire has taken Jason's loss hard, especially since Donna's death is still fresh on her mind. We also see Garth is having a conversation with Raven, but Raven's not really there. Raven is off somewhere trying to figure out how to resurrect Donna Troy.
Thymyscira, specifically.
Dick goes to Barbara because he's worried about Bruce. Barbara's reluctant, but Dick wants them both to talk to Bruce together. Barbara blames what happened to her father, Jason's death, and Dick's recklessness from season 1 on Bruce. She warns him not to drag anybody else into his war on crime. Barbara tells Dick to go home and not get manipulated and used by Bruce Wayne again. Dick tells Barbara that he's not going home until he figures out what Jason was doing before he died. Dick discovers that Jason had a secret drug lab. Dick brings a sample back to the Batcave to have it analyzed, but the Bat computer states the chemical compound is unknown. While Dick is using the Bat computer, a pop-up states file update acquired, and when Dick accesses it, he learns that Bruce has been looking for a new partner. We see the names Carrie Kelly, Daxon Chill, Stephanie Brown, and Duke Thomas. Bruce asks Dick if he wants to be Robin again, and Dick tells him no. Bruce admits he can't do this alone. Dick tells him not to do it anymore then. Back at Titan's Tower, Starfire has a weird vision of a guy with goggles. She wakes up and she's standing in the middle of the street. Dick is sleeping when Bruce comes into his room. Bruce tells Dick that the Joker started it and he ended it. He bashed Joker's skull in with a crowbar. Joker laughed at Batman while he did it because the Joker won. Bruce tells Dick the city is now his. Save it. Do what I couldn't. Be a better Batman.
Certainly got right into it this episode, didn't they, Drew?
Oh, yeah, they did.
You know, honestly, at first, when I was watching the episode, I was a little bit frustrated that they cruised so quickly through the Jason getting killed by the Joker aspect of the Red Hood story we all are quite familiar with at this point. But the more I thought about it as the episode went on, I was like, you know what? I think I'm kind of okay with this because I don't know that I needed more, because we're kind of getting the extra context that I wanted through Dick and his investigation into what Jason was up to. You know what I mean? So like initially I was like, oh, that was quite brief. I mean, it worked, but it was brief. And then we're getting that extra context now kind of through somebody else's perspective.
I have to agree with you, because when I first watched the episode, I had the same complaint. I was like, man, we went to this fast. The scene was quick. I was like, I didn't like that either. And when I watched the episode the second time, because I watched this 2 times, when I watched it again, I was like, okay, we didn't really need to spend more time with that. And I agree with you. Dick's investigation is giving us a better look into Jason's story without us having to extend the Joker-Jason confrontation. Plus, the other reason why I think they did it is they had the Joker on there without having to have the Joker on there, cast somebody to have the Joker on there, or to be the Joker, and deal with another version of the Joker. So I bet that's why they got to use the Joker without having the Joker on there, because we didn't really see his face or anything.
Yeah, I think those are all good points, Drew. The other thing that I wanted to get into is obviously the big sort of change at the end of the episode. It's not shocking to me this version of Batman would kill the Joker. I mean, this has been such a violent interpretation of the DC world that it's like, yeah, that makes sense. And given the way that we've seen the way Dick was trained to be Robin, you know, I got it. It's still, though, it's still jarring when you see that. You're like, oh, boy, that's a big change. And it does. It also feels I wasn't crazy about it, because obviously I never like any version in which Batman actually kills somebody. But I also got what they were doing because it's yet another clever way for them to get away with Bruce not suiting up as Batman.
Yeah, and I was wondering, are we going to see Bruce go to jail? Are we going to see Bruce disappear off the grid?
That I suspect the second one is my guess.
Well, I was thinking about, this is the other thing I was thinking about too. We know Tim Drake is supposed to become Robin sometime this season. So does that mean Batman's coming back? So that was the other thing that was on my mind. I was like, well, if Bruce disappears, how's he supposed to train Tim? Or, you know, what's that going to look like? Are we just going to train a Robin without a Batman? Or is Dick going to actually suit up as Batman, which I can't see happening, and train Tim? See, I'm just curious what they're planning on doing with that.
I wonder, Drew, this is just a wild guess. We know that Tim's on the show. Is Bruce potentially coming back their way of, you know, in the comics, Tim becomes Robin because he thinks Batman needs a Robin. And we certainly see that in this episode too. Batman certainly believes that. Does Tim become Robin as a way to convince Bruce to become Batman again? Possibly.
Yeah, possibly. So that's another theory. So all interesting. I'm very curious to see what's going to happen.
One thing that surprised me is when the compound came back with no results, that suggested to me that Scarecrow hasn't been in action in this universe. Is that the interpretation you had, Drew?
Was that supposed to be fear toxin that he took?
I was very confident that it is some version of fear toxin.
Okay. I was wondering if it was either that, or I thought maybe it might be Venom too. He might have tried to take Venom and he's actually not really dead. So I don't know.
My guess would have been fear toxin either way, but the reason I'm pretty confident about it is we know Scarecrow's in the show. And so to me, I was like, oh, so I was already like, oh, it's got to be fear toxin. But then when nothing came back, I was like, wait, does Scarecrow not exist yet? Is this a new villain to them? That was surprising to me. It's interesting, too. It's an interesting way to do that.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. I want to bring up some things from this episode that I liked. I loved the Titans fight scene at the beginning against Gizmo because we got to see Nightwing's Eskimo sticks and they looked really awesome. I liked the fact that they were electrically charged. I thought that was really cool. The other thing I really liked was we got to see Starfire powered up. And they did a good job. When she's powered up, we see that her hair's red, her eyes are glowing green, and her skin had an orange tint to it. So when she's powered up, she looks like the Starfire from the comics.
Finally.
So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. And I don't know if you had noticed that
when you were watching. Well, we had gotten the orange glowing skin. We had seen that in the first couple seasons. It's just nice to finally have her wearing something other than street clothes. Because it just stuck out. I don't think it would bother me as much, Drew, if everybody else was also doing that. But you had the vast majority of the team members rocking their very well-done superhero costumes, and then Starfire was just there in a dress. And it was like, come on, really, guys?
I honestly think they didn't know how to do it at first, and now they figured it out. So I was
happy. And I get that because there are some non-starters, to say the least, with some of her old costumes.
The other thing I really appreciated in this episode, I couldn't remember if we'd gotten glimpses of the Batcave in previous seasons, but I loved how we had the dinosaur and the giant penny represented in the main part of the cave, and that it led to other rooms that were like more finished. And I really liked this version of the Batcave. I think it's the best one we've seen on TV so far.
I can't disagree. It is very good. That's the thing. This show gets so much of the aesthetic right, Drew. And honestly, for the most part, the episodes themselves are pretty good. The thing that's frustrated me the first two seasons of this show is that they've not been able to tell a whole arc very well. Like, season one was pretty good, and then for a number of reasons, they completely dropped the ball on the ending. I think some of that was out of their control, but the ending is literally not in the first season. And then even if you just cut the first episode off the second season, and, you know, because it's really not part of the second season, even that has a wonky ending for the season as a whole. There's a lot of really good stuff. A lot of the DNA of this show is pretty good. And the aesthetic in particular, the costumes, the set design, is so well done. And if they can just get the plot up there with everything else, it's, I mean, there's no reason this can't just be a phenomenal show.
The other thing I want to talk about is, I was wondering who the heck Daxton Chill was when they brought that up, and I Googled it and found out he was from the We Are Robin storyline that I haven't read. So I was like, why? I was like, who is this character? And I had to look. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah, so one of the characters that popped up in the Aquaman anniversary special was Aquabeast. And obviously, I knew it was very clear he was based on a, you know, Silver Age character. I had just never heard of him. And sadly, they did not do a spread page for him. So it wasn't available in the issue itself. So I looked it up. And Aquabeast is originally a man named Peter Dudley, and he appears in Aquaman number 34 back in 1964.
Yeah, I had a feeling that was a callback to an older character. All right, and for my shout out, I'm going to shout out about Batman Year 3. Batman Year 3 was a story of after Death in the Family, when Jason Todd was killed, and how Batman was trying to deal with Jason's death. Dick was worried about him, and we see Dick comes back to Gotham, tries to help Bruce out because Bruce is becoming reckless. And so it kind of mirrors what we saw in the Titans episode here, but not exactly the same. And of course, it's the first introduction of Tim Drake also. I think I've shouted out about this before, but we actually talked about Batman Year 3 back in episode number 59. So, and we actually had Kevin Eldridge come on and talk about it with us. I actually went back and listened to part of the episode. I didn't have time to listen to the whole thing, but I was like, oh, this is interesting to go back and listen to. Because I've read Batman Year 3 many times over the years, so one of my favorite stories. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Justice League Infinity, Blue and Gold, Black Manta, Batman Catwoman, Suicide Squad Get Joker, The Swamp Thing, Batman, Green Lantern, Infinite Frontier, and of course our DC television shows, Supergirl, Stargirl, DC Legends Tomorrow, and Titan. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Wonder Woman, Wonder Woman,
all the world is waiting for you, and the power you possess. In your satin tights, fighting for your rights,
and the old red, white, and blue.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.